In the late 80s, I interviewed Eric McPherson when I was down visiting at Harding to come up and work as a youth minister with a church in St. Louis. And then in 2007, I got to interview him a second time. I'd just become the executive director, and he was kind of one of my first hires, and hired him for some role, but eventually went over to be the director of counseling. He's a third-level Gottman therapist, or level three Gottman therapist, and he's very, you'll see here in just a minute, he's really gifted as far as presenting. And early on in my career at Christian Family Services, he and I would go out, we had a federal grant, and we went to some lower income areas and did some marriage seminars, and we had to do eight hours a day of that, and it was great. And so we worked it out. He did about 4 hours. I did about 4 hours. We did that probably twice. And then I went to him and said, okay, I realize that the more you present and the less I present, the better these seminars are going to be. And so let's do that. And so he ended up doing about 75-80%, and I did the other, and they were so much better. And so he's very gifted, and he has done a lot of work with the Enneagram. And we disagree on one thing on the Enneagram, but that's okay. He'll probably say something about that. But he's very talented. He loves doing this Enneagram. He's done it for our staff, and it's kind of helping us to understand each other. And he's gone to a couple of the Network 127 agencies and has did a presentation for the staffs there. He's very, very good in presenting this. He's just a good guy. I call him a friend. We've known each other again for a long, long time, and he puts up with me a lot. So I'm excited to have him here for the morning to talk about the Enneagram. So I'll turn it over to Eric McPherson. And if you have, you might notice on the end aisles, there are the notes. And if you could take them and pass them down, and if you're missing any, if they get to the end and you run out of them, just raise your hand, and I've got some up here that I will get to you. Eric?
Thanks for having me, let me be here today. I feel like I'm kind of the ninth guy in the batting order, you know? It's like, hey, he plays good defense, he can't hit that well, but we're going to let him be on the team. After all these amazing speakers, and I really mean that, amazing devotional speakers, plenary speakers, it's been incredible to be here. So I'm really glad to have come and been a part of this. The first night, they said, who's been here before, who's a first timer? And I stood up and Steve goes, you presented at the last session. I went, oh, I totally forgot about that. So I feel like this is my first time because I've never traveled to a workshop before. I was at the one in St. Louis before the blip ruined everything. And so I feel like this is my first time because I didn't go to the whole session when you guys were in St. Louis. I just kind of showed up here and there. This is the first time I've been immersed in this workshop, and it's been really good for me. It's kind of filled my bucket up. I didn't talk to clients for 3 days. I barely looked at emails for 3 days. I just talked to people and had fun. We went putt-putt golfing last night with a group of us, went out to eat. That was just enjoyable. I so rarely get those times to just have space to relax. So I really appreciate you guys having me here today. I really appreciate Chuck. I know you've gotten a lot of accolades, Chuck, but let me just tell you, I'm not good with technology. It took me a month, I know you don't think this is possible, but it took me a month just to email my presentation to him because I had computer problems, I had to get a new computer, that one wasn't set up, and I know he probably didn't believe me when I kept saying, look, I'm trying to send it to you, but it's just not working, and that was just me. And think of all the details he had to work with, and I know that I caused him a lot of trouble. So I really appreciate Chuck's patience, because he never once got frustrated. If he did, he didn't show it. I just really appreciate all the work that Chuck did into making this conference go well. And Brian, I just met Brian this morning, but no workshop works without a tech guy, and because people like me don't know what we're doing. So I appreciate Brian, and I found out this morning that he is a Razorback fan. He grew up in Fayetteville. I grew up in Arkansas. So I'm a Razorback fan. I have a little notebook that has a little Razorback on it. Isn't that cute? So we are well acquainted with suffering. So be nice to us, okay? I feel like God is bringing us out of our desert experience the last year to have been okay. But we went through a period where I was ashamed to tell people I was a Razorback fan. It was truly awful. So it's always nice to find someone else who suffers like me. So just a little bit about myself, and then we're going to talk about two ideas, and then we'll get into an overview of the Enneagram. And then in the second half, we'll really dive in to the types, okay? So this part is just going to be kind of an overview and intro, and the second part we'll dive into what do all the types mean. My name is Eric. I follow a guy named Jesus. I'm married to my wife, Elizabeth, for 23, almost 24 years now. She's the most amazing part of my life. I recruited well and married way above my pay grade. And if you saw her and met her, you would completely understand what I'm talking about. Just ask Jody. I work with Jody right there. By the way, it's been good to see Jody come alive at this conference. Yeah, I'm going to talk about you for a second. She is the mayor of Network 127 because these are her people. I'm a simple talk therapist, right? That's what I tell them. I'm a simple talk therapist. Jody is everything at CFS. Social services director, office manager, mother, nurse, I don't know, everything. And so these are her people, and she has just had the best time. So I've really enjoyed being around Jody and watching her communicate with people who are on her level, not like me. And so it's been really good to see that. My kids are 21, 18, and 15. I had a kid after the age of 40, so I said to her, and she's going to graduate in 2 years, I said, you know, what's sad is that at your high school graduation, everybody's going to say, oh, it's so good your grandpa came with you. And you're going to have to say, no, it's my dad. We are all five different numbers on the Enneagram. I'm a 7, my wife's a 1, my oldest is a 4, my middle child, my son, is a 5, my youngest daughter, Marissa, is a 9. That may not mean anything to you yet, but hopefully by the end of the day, it might mean something. There are a lot of people that know more about the Enneagram than me. A lot of people. I am not an expert by any means. There are two things that really shape my therapy, and that's the Enneagram personality theory and Gottman marriage therapy, because I do a lot of marriage therapy. I love doing marriage therapy. I'm a weirdo. I could do it for hours. Probably could stay in there longer than my clients could, just because I love Gottman. I love doing marriage therapy, because I really think at the core of our country, we need to strengthen our marriages. If you have a strong marriage, you have a strong church, strong community, strong country. And so I really get excited about helping marriages get stronger, because everybody can be married well. They can be. Just some people really struggle because nobody took a class on marriage. Maybe they do now, but when I was at Harding, I didn't take a marriage class. They just gave me a toaster and said, good luck. And we all get in and we all struggle. And so I love doing marriage therapy. But the Enneagram has really helped my individual work. Young people love it. There's some young people here. All the young people here, and I would say under 30 is young. Do you guys know about the Enneagram? Do you know your number? Okay. I did a search committee a couple of years ago for our church. We were looking for a youth minister. And almost every candidate we got in had their Enneagram number on their resume. And I love that because it gives me a file folder for who they might be. Okay, you don't pigeonhole people, but it just gives you a structure with which to know, are they introverted, extroverted, how do they work, what are their motivations, what are their problems, struggles, strengths. And so I really enjoy using the Enneagram, not to pigeonhole or judge people, to understand people. So I don't know as much as other people, but I am probably the most enthusiastic about it, and I got stories. So that's really where I come from. But there are a lot of people out there to read. Ian Crone, there's websites, I'll go through all that. There's a lot of people that know more than I do. I'm just happy to share this information with you and tell you really how it impacts my life. Nothing has helped me as a person more than the Enneagram. And I was a big Myers-Briggs guy. Is anybody in here a Myers-Briggs guy? Huge Myers-Briggs. I love the Myers-Briggs. I did the Myers-Briggs. I talked about the Myers-Briggs. And a couple of years ago, I guess it was more than that, there was a period where, I don't know, for 2 or 3 weeks, people kept bringing this idea of the Enneagram to me. Steve came in my office, have you heard about the Enneagram? And I'm like, no. Somebody else at church said it. And so it was just, I don't know, four or five times within a two-week period, it felt like a burning bush moment. Those moments where God is saying, hey, look over here, and you don't get it at first. And I finally said, all right, it seems like I need to check this out, read a book, and fell in love. And so nothing has helped me more as a person, as a dad, as a husband, more than the Enneagram. Because I typically would look at my wife and the way she does things and go, that is so wrong. I do it the right way. How could she be this, right? And now I go, oh, well, she's a one on the Enneagram. Well, that makes sense. So it's given me more patience. It's changed my language. A lot of times we use pejorative language, like it's weird or strange, or you're being difficult. No, my son's a five. It doesn't make sense to me. But he needs a lot of time alone in his room after an event. He's the kid that goes and waits in the car after church because he doesn't want to talk to people. He's not antisocial, he's a five. And so it's changed the language of how I relate to my kids. A lot of times, my relationship with my daughter who's at college is sending Enneagram stuff back and forth. There's a lot of memes out there, there's a lot of websites, there's a lot of Instagram accounts that follow Enneagram stuff. And so we'll just send stuff back and forth to each other. Because it's helped her to know, oh, she's a four. She's not the only one in the world like herself, which was her story. She was uniquely broken, right? It's what she told herself. And when you get into the Enneagram, you go, oh, I'm uniquely broken like all the other fours in the world. So it helps normalize things in your head. Let's talk about just a couple of things first before we get into the intro to the Enneagram. Just a couple of ideas. What we do is really hard. Carrie just mentioned it, that you're planting seeds and you're not going to see the growth for years, maybe if ever. I never really know what I'm doing therapy for. Sometimes I'm doing therapy in the moment. Sometimes I'm doing therapy for later. I was working with a married couple once. Couldn't quite figure out what was going on. Something seemed off. It felt like there was something I didn't know. They stopped doing therapy. They just dropped out. You know, people, do we have any therapists in the room? Okay, so people schedule, and then they call back and cancel. And they never reschedule, and they never said, hey, this is why I'm dropping out or not coming back. You never know why. You never know what happens to the rest of the story. She came back in a few years later and said, turns out he was a narcissist. He was stealing money from our accounts. He was setting up loans and credits that I didn't know about. There was this whole backstory that nobody knew about. And I go, that's what it was. And so I wasn't counseling in the moment for the marriage. I was counseling in the moment to build a relationship of trust with her so that she could come back years later and recover. So we don't often know if what we're doing is making a difference, right? You help a kid, sometimes you send them back in the home, and nothing's improved. And so we get discouraged, we lose hope, because what we do is difficult. I want to talk about two quick ideas, because what I like talking to new people, because I get to tell the same old stories, but it's new to you. And so that works out for me. I like that part. The first is an idea from the book by Andy Stanley called Irresistible. I love that book. Great book. And in the book, he shares an idea. And he says, that's my paraphrase of his idea. While Israel wept for the destruction of Jerusalem, God was smuggling himself into Babylon. Let's say that again. While Israel wept for the destruction of their holy city, God was smuggling himself into Babylon. That is a beautiful thought. Because what I think in the moment is so horrible to me. Because the worst thing to a Jew at that time would have been the destruction of the holy city. Oh, and on top of it, you're being carried off as a slave nation to a foreign country. That's a pretty bad day. And all the time, God was going, shh, stop. Stop complaining. I'm doing something. You're going to ruin this if you keep complaining. I'm smuggling myself in. Because God never knocks a door down. He always sneaks in. And so of all the monikers that we have for God, and we have a lot of good ones, you know, he is strong, he is mighty, he is just, He is powerful. He is all-knowing, all-being. And those may be true. Maybe some better words are that God is a sneaky God. Now, that doesn't make for a cool song. Our God is an awesome God is a great song, right? It makes me feel awesome about God. It doesn't sound good if you sing, our God is a sneaky God. It doesn't sound as good, right? But I think a better moniker for God is that maybe he's sneaky. He's always ahead of me. I don't know how you feel. But whatever I complain about in the moment, I feel like God is always saying, Eric, shut up. Be quiet. I'm doing something and you're about to ruin it. Because God is always working his plan out. And sometimes it's hard to believe that in the moment as workers. True? The second idea that I want to talk about is, by the way, I say that my entire life is plagiarized. I'm proud to own that. I read smart people like Gottman, Timothy Keller, Andy Stanley, and I tell you what they say. Right, so that's my life. I plagiarize. Somebody once said, well, it's not plagiarism if you're citing. Okay, good enough. But I'm a 7, and I like to say inappropriate things, and I like to embellish things. So I like to say that my life is plagiarized. Is that okay? Okay. This is the one story that I don't think is plagiarized. It might be, but I don't think it is. It came from a sermon that I was supposed to do years ago for my church. I was filling in for the preacher. He was going somewhere doing something. And he said, hey, can you do Sunday? And I said, sure. And he goes, so well, here's the series. So you're talking about the story of Jesus walking on water. This is not in your notes, sorry. Side note to that, I've redone my presentation about 4 times since I've been here. So what's on the screen is going to look very different from what is down on your paper. If you want my presentation, you're welcome to email me and I'll ship it to you. It may take a month, like with Chuck, but I'll get it to you if you want that. But some of the slides are going to be a little different than what you have in front of you because I emailed that a month ago, 2-3 weeks ago. And I've worked on it since. So this story is not in there. So I was going through the story of Jesus walking on water. We really should reframe it as the story of Peter walking on water. Because, you know, that was more impressive than Jesus doing it. And I'm going through the story, and I've heard the story all my life. I've been a grown-up Church of Christ. I went to Central Arkansas Christian High School in Little Rock. I went to Harding University. I went to church 13 times a week. And then people stop by my dorm room and say, hey, you going to the Devo tonight? I would say, no, I go to church 13 times a week. I'm going to play basketball. So I've heard this story all my life. And here's how the story typically goes from the pulpit. It's that Peter got out of the boat. And I'm trying to use my preacher voice. Peter got out of the boat, and he walked on water. And he took his eyes off Jesus, and he looked at the wind and the waves, and he sank. Oh, Peter, how could you fail us so miserably? Is what it sounded like, right? That this is somehow a story of failure. As I'm preparing this sermon, I'm talking to a friend of mine. I call him my flaming liberal friend. I like, because we have many times opposite views, and so I love to talk to him to get the other side. Because I always want to talk in terms that will relate to everybody. And I said, Steve, if we're in the boat that day, because these were guys just like us. These disciples were just like us. I said, so if we're in the boat, what's our reaction? Number one, we're scared because Jesus was walking on water, right? That's going to freak us out. Matter of fact, Scripture says Jesus was about to pass them by. That's funny to me. Jesus was walking on water and he got caught. He was about to pass them by. He was going to go by without saying anything. He was just taking a shortcut, and they caught him. And that makes me go, what else was he doing behind the scenes that nobody knew about, right? So he's about to go by them. They get scared. Peter gets out of the boat, and I say to my buddy, what do we do when Peter gets out of the boat? He goes, we probably head palm, right? Like, oh, Peter, come on, man. You're always jumping out of the boat, cutting somebody's ear off, like saying the wrong thing, saying the right thing. Peter had ADHD. He was probably really spontaneous. He's jumping out of the boat. And we're rolling our eyes. But then he walks on water. Like 3 feet, 30 feet, 300 feet, it doesn't say. But he walked on water. And we start to pay attention. And we start to go, oh my gosh. And we start elbowing each other. And then he sinks. Then he gets back in the boat. I said, when he gets back in the boat, what's our reaction? He goes, oh, we're like high-fiving and chest bumping. I said, right, right. This is a story of success. It's not a story of failure. If we had phones, we'd be Instagramming, recording, right? We'd be putting it on YouTube that this guy walked on water. How has this become a story of failure? It's a story of success. When he got back in the boat, Peter's reaction must have been, whoa. And if I'm his friend, I'm like, what was that like? Was the water hard? Was it soft? Were you floating? Were you on air? Like, how did that happen? I don't understand. And scripture does say that Jesus reached down his hand and said, oh, Peter, oh, ye of little faith. But I don't think he said it in a scolding way. I think he was saying, oh, you could have gone so much further if only you believed. Because a lot of people in here have had kids, right? And when your kids learn to walk, they look drunk, and they run into a wall, and they fall down. It doesn't go well the first time. Was anybody disappointed at that? Nobody was disappointed. You were excited. You gave them M&Ms. You called your neighbor, or friend, or mom, or dad, or brother, or sister. You recorded it, and you said, oh my gosh, they just took their first steps. We're excited not because they failed. We're excited because they attempted to be like us. And I think that moment of Peter walking on water is an example of how we pervert the gospel of hope into the gospel of disappointment. We do that. The story is about Peter's success, but we turn it and go, oh, Peter, such an idiot, can't even walk on water. It's a story of success. I want to fight against the gospel of disappointment and focus on the gospel of hope. Enneagram helps us do that. Now, you know, the first century church didn't carry around Bibles, right? They didn't have Bibles. They told stories. They told stories of what they'd seen and heard. And they sat around campfires and they ate food. And you know, they would tell stories like this. Remember the one time he healed that girl? Oh my gosh, it was amazing. He stopped the funeral. You should have seen the dad's reaction when he raised that little girl from the dead. Remember the guy with leprosy? Oh my, I can't believe he touched that guy. Nobody had touched that guy in years. And then eventually somebody went, yo, Peter, tell him the story. And he was a fisherman, so it went like this. It was a dark and stormy night. The waves were 30 feet high. There were sharks in the water everywhere, and I got out and walked on water. You know, that was his favorite story for the rest of his life. Because it's the story of Peter walking on water. Because what Jesus did, we expect. What we didn't expect was Peter. So in our work as agencies, whether you're a social worker, executive director, office manager, counselor, we are fighting against this gospel of disappointment. And we fall prey to it too. I have to constantly remind myself that God is a sneaky God and everything's okay. Stop complaining, which is hard for me, right, Steve? It's hard for me not to complain to my church, to my elders, because I just want things to be so good. And I have to remind myself that God is a sneaky God, and I have to fight against the gospel of disappointment and the implication of failure. Not everything we do is a failure. The couple I talked about, did I help their marriage? No, they divorced. Did it work? Yeah, later. When she came back and recovered from being married to a narcissistic, abusive husband. And so it didn't seem like in the moment that I did anything. It didn't seem like a success. And so we all fall prey to this implication of failure. Let's fight against it. Okay. Now let's talk about the Enneagram, right? Now that we've set that up. So who in here is familiar with the Enneagram? Raise your hands. Okay, most everyone. Who in here knows their number? Okay, so how many ones do we have? One? Okay. How many twos? I expect a lot. Because most of our agency at CFS are twos and nines. They're the most likely to go into a helping agency, right? How many threes do we have? I know. Oh, we have a bunch of threes. They make good executive directors, right? How many fours? 1-4? By the way, great magic show the other night. That was awesome. How many fives? You have a five. Five? Just two fives? All right. Awesome. Sixes? Two sixes. They say the Enneagram says half the world are sixes. I don't know how they know that, because they haven't polled everybody or tested everybody. I think they're just making a guess. Probably right, but I don't know how they get there. How many sevens do we have? I have a brother. We have 1 7 over there? What do you do?
I'm the unit director for supervising and
analytics.
Okay. Yeah, 18 and 21.
Awesome. I'm glad you're here. I don't want to feel so alone. We should go out to do something fun later. I don't know this, but I'm a weirdo in this field because I don't know a lot of sevens that go and turn into therapists because we don't like to deal with negative stuff, painful stuff. That's what I do every day. And so I think it's a little odd that I'm a seven and a therapist. I don't know I'm the only one. I'd just be willing to bet we're a rare breed. How many eights do we have? How many nines? How many don't know? Oh, good. Okay. We've got a lot of people that don't know. You may not know by the end of this day. Okay? To some people, it's clear right off the bat. Oh, my goodness, I'm a one. To some people, it takes a little while to figure it out. We had a therapist at CFS that forever was telling us that he was a two. And after doing a lot of study and a lot of podcasting, 6 months later came back and said, no, I'm a nine. Cool. We don't care. You should care. But we don't care. I don't care if you're a two or a nine or a six or an eight. It helps me if I know that. If I'm going to work with you on a group project, it helps me to know what your number is. But we don't have to know. And by the way, this is not truth. This is a lens. God has truth. We don't. This is a lens. It's flawed, but it's really helpful. But there's no blood test. So we're not going to like send you to the doctor and get blood drawn. And he goes, oh, my gosh, you're really a six? Look at that. There's no way to know. You are what you say you are, okay? There should be a feeling once you go through the Enneagram of, ooh, that's what I do. That's who I am. It should feel like conviction. It doesn't feel bad, but you feel convicted, right? When I realized I was a seven, I went, ooh, that's what I do. I didn't feel bad, but it did feel like conviction. Does that make sense? So probably by the end of this, you may know what you are. If you don't, that's cool too. Just keep thinking about it. Work through it. Because it really helps me work with people better. So let's kind of dive in the slides. This is not in your packet, so don't look for it. I added this last night because I sit here and I hear all these great speakers and it makes me think all these ideas. And so I just sit and write down what I want to say and add to. So I blame it on people like Dr. Schenck. It's your fault that I added all this stuff. The Enneagram helps us fight against the gospel of disappointment and the implication of failure. Because we all get down in the moment when something doesn't work out, when we don't get the grant, when we don't help the child, when a marriage splits up. I had a lot of marriages break up on Zoom in the moment because of the pandemic. A lot of long-term clients decided in session, I'm done. And I have to go, okay, God's a sneaky God. It's okay. I didn't fail. This is not a failure. We're going to stick in it. We're going to help them divorce in a godly way. Because if they're going to divorce, I can't stop that. But can I help them divorce in a more godly fashion? Because people can get really nasty in their divorce. And that's not what we want. So can we help them be kind to each other while they divorce? As Richard Beck says in his books, the Enneagram helps us to widen our circle of affection. We all tend to be tribal. We're still tribal, right? Church of Christ, my family, Razorbacks. We're tribal. And God helps us, and the Enneagram helps us, widen our circle of affection. Because God never comes to us in forms that we're comfortable with. He always comes to us as a stranger. Things we don't understand. Things that make us uncomfortable. That's how he's always going to show. He's not going to show up as a white Razorback fan to me. That makes sense to me. I'm comfortable with that. He's going to show up in a form that I don't understand. So the Enneagram helps us to widen our circle of affection. Helps us to spread kindness through acceptance. We all want to do something great and change the world. We're about to come up on high school graduation. And what are we going to tell these high school seniors? Go change the world. It's terrible. We should stop telling them that. I've actually worked with teenagers who said that message ruined my life because I didn't change the world. You're not going to. Most of your life is going to be spent standing in lines. The DMV, the licensure office. I had a day off recently and I spent all day standing in lines with my daughter trying to get her license and then go to the DMV and then you have to go to another place and then I'd stand in line at the computer store. It was frustrating. While you're standing in line, can you find ways to be kind to people? He brought out the idea of St. Teresa in Little Way, the L'Arche community. I don't know if you've heard of that. I hadn't heard of that until I read this book. But she was a nun that lived in the 1800s in France. She died of tuberculosis at 24. She wanted to change the world, but to do it, she joined a convent where everybody believed in Jesus. A little strange way to go about it, but she loved Jesus. And she wasn't very well known in the convent. Matter of fact, she wasn't really even popular until after she died and they discovered her writings. She talked about the little way, that when she was folding napkins for dinner, she would try to do it the greatest amount of love that she could. When she passed somebody in the hallway, she tried to do that with the greatest amount of love that she could. And it started a movement in the Catholic Church called the Little Way, the L'Arche community. I'll tell you about a God moment after the session. I don't want to waste time with that. But we have a L'Arche community right across the street from our church. And I felt Jesus saying, you should go there. And if you don't, you're going to be judged harshly because they're right across the street. And they work with adults with intellectual disabilities. And so hopefully our church is going to make a connection with the L'Arche community and help out there. So we spread kindness through acceptance of other people and ourselves. Sometimes, depending on your type, you're so kind to other people, but you're not kind to yourself. How many people here beat themselves up every day for everything you don't do or should do, right? So it'd be great if you could start being kind to yourself. And the Enneagram helps us see that through that lens. It helps us not take ourselves so seriously. Somebody mentioned that this week, about sometimes we take ourselves way too serious. We are just cogs in a wheel. And I'm happy to be a cog. I really am. And Jesus is the wheel, and we're part of this kingdom of failures, helping other failures. But I'm a failure. Just ask Jody or Steve. I got a story. I really do. If you want to hear it afterwards, let me know. Because I am a failure helping other failures. It really helps us improve our morale as an agency because of St. Teresa of the Little Way says, in this convent, we don't really have enemies, but we do have irritants. How many people have irritants at work? Jody, I knew she's going to raise her hand. And guess who one of those irritants is? Hello, right? There's a guy at our work who does our insurance. His name is Alec. He's an Enneagram 5, and he is a perfectionist. Plus, he's OCD. He and I have learned to get along quite nicely, actually. In the beginning, there was a few bumping of heads because I'm a 7. I don't like paperwork, and I don't pay attention to detail because I'm always looking at the big picture. So we went at it a couple of times. And by at it, I mean a couple of terse emails back and forth. That's the way we go at it. We've learned to coexist pretty nicely because of the Enneagram. Because I went, oh, he's a 5. Well, that's how they do things, and that's okay. I have to allow other people to be who they are. So it promotes acceptance of ourselves and other people. It helps us with our irritants. A couple of good scriptures for the Enneagram. Paul talks about it. We are one body but many parts. There are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them, and in everyone, it is the same God at work. We all approach things differently. And there's not one right way. There is one right God. He is in everything, but we all do it differently. Just as the body, the one, has many parts, but all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit, so as to form one body. Whether a 1 or a 2, whether a 4 or a 5, we were all given one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but many. I changed things a little bit in that scripture. Hope that's okay. I'm not trying to do anything terrible, but we are all different types. right? We all live in one country now, we're all Americans, but we're all so different. And so to update the scripture, it might be good to plug in the different types to help us get along better with each other. Another scripture, and this was the first scripture that connected to the Enneagram for me. I was sitting in church, our preacher was preaching about something, and I tend to get lost thinking about other things. Anybody else do that? And so I start, he'll read one section of scripture, and it'll get me thinking, and I'll start doing my own little Bible study in the pew. So at least he's getting me thinking about stuff. But it wasn't about what he was talking about that day. 1 Peter 4:10. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. And I went, wait a second. What do you mean various forms? Grace comes as a gift that we receive from his death on the cross. We get salvation because we believe in him. That's grace. I went, wait a second. What is grace in its various forms? I started thinking about it. I could be wrong about this. My wife is a one, an Enneagram one. Those people are perfectionists. They do the right thing all the time. Nobody works harder than them. They have the highest moral and ethical standards on the planet. She is the office manager slash bookkeeper for our church. The grace that she gives our church is that no one will ever spend a penny at our church that she doesn't know about. When they hired her, I said, Jeff, she's going to be good at what she does. Jeff is our preacher. And I said, and you're going to regret it because she's going to make sure that she knows everything. In the first week, our youth minister, Jeremy, turned in a receipt from camp. And you know how youth ministers are. I can say that because I was one, right? He turned in a receipt to get reimbursed, and she went through the receipt and said, now, these six granola bars that you bought, were those for the camp or for you? He said, for me. Well, I'm going to take those off. I said, see? I told you she was going to catch everything. That's her grace that she gives to our church. If I were the bookkeeper, our church would be the next Enron. We would go down in flames, right? The grace I offer our church is that I show up, or used to, more often than now, on Wednesday nights, and come up with stupid games for the youth group. I once, driving home from work, saw a vision. It was a vision from the Lord, as if I was looking over our auditorium and looking at the pews, and I saw the video game Centipede, right? And so I went to church that night. I was like, we're going to play a game, Church Pew Pac-Man or Church Pew Centipede. And we got in the thing, and I came up with all these stupid rules. It didn't work as well as I thought it was going to work, but at least now the kids are laughing at me. And they still talk about Church Pew Pac-Man. Whenever I'm like in church, they're like, are we going to have to play that Church Pew Pac-Man? No, we don't have to do that. It was an experiment. It didn't work, but it was a good vision for a moment. That's what I do, right? Steve is a two. He can't help himself from helping people. It's like an addiction. That's his grace that he offers to the kingdom. We all do it differently, and we ought to all appreciate the grace that we each give differently to people, even within our agencies. There we go. Here's a great quote from the Enneagram. I love this quote, which is why I put it in here. The beginning of love is the will to let those we love be perfectly themselves. When two very different people come together, there's always a temptation to want to twist the other into our own likeness for the purpose of making our lives better. The truth of the matter is, our calling is to let others be perfectly themselves, not just to tolerate our differences, but to celebrate them. Who in here thinks they live life the right way? Which I know, don't be ashamed. Put it up high. Put it up high. You should think you live life the right way. Please, everybody put your hand up. You think you live life the right way. It'd be weird if you didn't. The problem is other people live life the right way too. It's just different. So when I meet somebody and work with them, I want to try to twist them into being like me. Because of course I do things the right way, right? And so let me deal with your speck in your eye, and I'm going to help you be more like me. That's our temptation. But what did Jesus say about the speck and log work? It doesn't work that well. Even if I'm right about your speck, it doesn't work because I can't get close enough to help you because I got a plank sticking out of my eye. So we all get caught in that speck and log dilemma where we try to help with your speck, but I'm not dealing with my log. We're much more effective if we just deal with our log. The beginning of love is to let those we love be perfectly themselves, not try to change them to be like us. When we become critical of others because they fail to be who we want them to be, we expose our selfishness and our lack of self-knowledge. The Enneagram is a tool that awakens our compassion and appreciation for people just as they are, not the people we wish they would become, so my life would be easier. The best version of ourselves is the one who accepts life on life's terms and other people for who they are, instead of believing that we are owed a different experience. I want to be clear about this. I am not a Buddhist. I'm a Christian. I know about 45 seconds worth of material in Buddhism and what I know I like, and I use it in therapy. The Buddhist would say that here's the life you want, and here's the life you get, and the difference is suffering. To reduce our suffering, we have to accept what life gives us. Because we've all tried to coach life up. Did it work? Not for me. We have to accept what life gives us. Here's the wife I want, here's the wife I get, and I have to accept her. Here's the kids I want, here's the kids I get, and I have to accept them. Here's the husband my wife is married to, and here's the husband she gets, and I mean this sincerely, she suffers more than I do. And she has to do the same thing. It's a very Christian principle. Here's the Christian Jesus wants, here's the Christian he gets. And he said, okay, I'm going to die for you. While you are a sinner, I'm going to die for you. And it inspires us to get better. And he doesn't care if we don't, because our sins are already covered. So many times, we don't accept people. And we suffer the difference. So let's accept people. And then what's going to happen is they're going to grow. And if they don't, we shouldn't care, because this is not manipulation. We've already accepted them. If they get better, great. If they don't, that's okay too. Our job is to accept them where they're at. Okay? By the way, we're going to get there when we start talking about the Enneagram specifically, but feel free to interrupt me and disagree. I like a conversation. I like to talk, but I also like conversation. So if I say anything that you say, that I don't think that's right, throw up your hand and we'll talk about it. Is that okay? So feel free to shout me down, heckle me, ask questions, interrupt me. That doesn't throw me off. I don't mind that at all. I actually kind of like that. Okay? Let's overcome some objections. I don't know if you have them, but people typically do when they hear about the Enneagram, because it looks like a pentagram, and then it sort of feels satanic, and it's not at all. So let's just talk about some objections that people might have to the Enneagram and try to address them. The Enneagram's been around for a long time. It is not new. It's just new to me. It's been around for hundreds of years, and there's not one person that's responsible for it. There's a lot of people that have helped shape it and change it and hone it. So there's not one person that you can say, oh, it's Freud or Adler, or you know, there's not one guy. It's been shaped by a lot of people over hundreds of years. It's not based in scripture, but it does have a lot of spiritual undertones, connects the seven deadly sins plus fear and anger to the nine types, and that's the end of the next session that we'll be doing in the salon rooms. And it's one of the most insightful parts of the Enneagram to me, connecting my sin to my type. And by the way, I'm really good at all the sins. I don't like to brag. I'm a pretty humble guy. But I'm really good at all of the sins. But there's one that I struggle with, and it connects it to my type. Another seven struggle with this kind of sin. And so it helped me go, oh, that's what I do. It illuminated an area of my life to me. So the Enneagram is not specifically spiritual, but it is connected. And I think scripture and the Enneagram go well together. I've taught it at my church, and nobody's complained, which that's a big thing if people don't complain at church about what you teach. To me now, when I read the Gospels, I read it through the lens of the Enneagram. And I see Jesus, and I go, oh, that's where he's being a two, because he's helping them. And that's where he's being an eight, because at the temple, when he turned over the tables, he's being an eight. And when he's at the temple with the scribes, he's being a five. When he's weeping with Mary and Martha at the tomb of Lazarus, he's probably being a four, right? Very compassionate, very accepting. So I love reading through the Gospels and seeing what type he might be, because Jesus is a great representation of all nine types, regardless of what Steve says. Because he did come in my office one day and goes, now, you always say in the Enneagram that Jesus is all nine types, but I really think you're wrong. I really think he was a two. And I said, of course you would think that, you arrogant jerk. All twos think theirs is the best way to live. I don't think Jesus was a seven. But twos think Jesus was a two because he helped people. Why wouldn't you help people? I'll tell you why I don't help people, because I'm a seven. I have a confession. This angered some people when I did this presentation at the agency in Abilene. It angered one person. I have never done a meal train in my life. I don't want it. I don't participate in it. I don't sign up. I have never taken food to anybody in need. And I mean this, God forbid my wife dies. Don't bring me food. I can go to McDonald's. In my grief, I can cry into my quarter pounder. I don't want you bringing food to my house that I have to wash and label and then get back to you. That's too much work for me as a seven. I don't do meal trains. And one lady at the seminar, she just couldn't get past. She was like, excuse me, you've never done a meal train. I was like, no, I haven't. I've never done it. She came back to it like four or five times. I can't believe you've not done a meal. I'm like, no, believe it. I have not done a meal train and I will not do it. It is not my type. I'm a seven. I don't like that. I'll show up at your house and maybe juggle if you teach me. Maybe that would help you through your grief, right? I'll show up and throw a party, but I'm not going to do a meal train. Sorry, that was just my confession. Here's some helpful resources. There's a lot of good ones out there, many more than I probably know about. These are the ones I use. Enneagraminstitute.com to me is the premier website of the Enneagram. It's based on the book, The Wisdom of the Enneagram, but it's just online, so you don't have to carry around a big, thick book with you. But I love it, love it, love it. There's a $12 test you can take online if you want your clients or if you want to take a test to see what type you might be. I say might be because the test doesn't tell you what you are. I can't say that enough. Please write that down. The test doesn't tell you what you are. You decide what you are. If the test says you're a four but you think you're a three, you're a three. That's what you are. The test is only going to knock out the bottom four or five and give you your top three or four numbers to look at. That's all the test does. It just kind of helps you cut down the time you could spend reading about all nine types. And so you read about two, three, or four, right? But there's a $12 test on the Enneagram Institute. One of the best parts about the Enneagram Institute, if you find your type and you click on that tab, if you scroll to the bottom, it gives you growth recommendations. Five growth recommendations for each type. That is the gold of the Enneagram. That's what I love. How can I get a little better at being me? What that meant for me was that, before the blip, 4 or 5 years ago, I took my family to New Orleans on spring break vacation. And my wife is a one, so she's very good at being present, right? Ones, twos, and sixes are great at being present. Threes, sevens, and eight, we'll talk about this in hour number two, are great at doing the future stuff. I've got three kids that are all introverted, four, five, and nine, and they live in the past. They regret things before they do them. My daughter, I tell her, you pre-regret. She'll go to Goodwill, because my family loves Goodwill, and she'll go to Goodwill and be like, Dad, should I buy this? I said, well, Marissa, you're going to regret it before and after. So you might as well buy something and have something to regret instead of nothing to regret, because you're going to regret either way. So buy it. It's $2, right? What's a big deal? So every morning we would go to Café Beignet. Has anybody been to Café Beignet? Café Du Monde is the popular place. Don't go there. Don't waste your time. Café Beignet is way better. Jazz music, courtyard, birds, plants, flowers. It's beautiful. We'd go every morning, get coffee and beignets, and sit there. And about 30 minutes in, my knees start shaking. And I start drumming my fingers because I'm a seven. I'm the only one in my family who ever knows what time it is. I've got a clock in my head. And so I'm thinking, if you want to go see the alligators, and we're going to go to Oak Alley Plantation, which is amazing, by the way. If you ever get a chance to go there, it is like going to holy ground. Seriously, it is amazing. You want to do that, and you want to go to the art museum, we got to get going. Well, I'm always living in the next moment. I'm terrible at being present. So my goal that week, is every time I felt my fingers tap, was to sit another 10 minutes with my family. Because they could sit there all day having beignets and coffee and never get anywhere, right? Which is a wonderful quality, but frustrating to a seven. You can't believe how hard that 10 minutes was for me. To sit another 10 minutes and be fully present and not look at my watch for 10 minutes was hard. I did that every day. That's how I was dealing with my log. instead of trying to deal with my kids' spec. Instead of trying to twist them to be like me, I need to work on myself. But it's so easy to think that they're wrong and I'm right because I'm the dad, but it's not that way. 9types.com is a little outdated. It hasn't been updated since 1998, it says on the website, but I love it. It's still there. You can take a free test, but again, the test doesn't tell you what you are. But the 9types.com gives you great little shorthand that we'll get into in the second hour, how to get along with me section. Really changed my relationship with my son. When I read one thing about the five, be brief and straightforward in your conversations, I went, I'm a therapist dad. I could talk for 2 hours about your feelings. He didn't want to talk for 2 hours. He doesn't mind talking. He wants to keep it short and brief. So now I go in his room at night and say, give me 5 minutes. Okay. He's good with 5 minutes. He's not good with 2 hours. And his freshman year, we had to talk through some serious stuff. And I was making it worse. I thought more talking we did, the better it got. It was getting worse because I was talking too much. 5 minutes. He's good. And so learning those little how to get along with me is really helpful in getting along with people in your agency. TheRoadBackToYou.com, there's also a book, the preeminent book of the Enneagram. It's a great intro book by Ian Crone and Susan Stabile, The Road Back to You. The only problem is he's so super positive about all the types, you're going to think you're all of them. You're going to be like, oh, I'm a two, I'm a three, I'm a four, I'm all of them, maybe. But that is a great book. It's a great primer to start the intro to the Enneagram. And the Wisdom of the Enneagram, big thick book that's on the website. There's a lot of Instagram, Twitter accounts to follow. They're all pretty good, right? So there's a lot of information out there. These are just the ones that I like and the ones that I use in my therapy. Here's the Enneagram. It looks sort of scary, like a pentagram. It's not. Don't think that. It's just a circle. That's all it is. It's a circle. We don't need to be afraid of circles with lines in them, right? That's all it is. And it's a helpful tool. We'll get into what all those lines mean in the second hour. Here are the names. This is what the Enneagram Institute says, and I kind of go by these names. There's other names on other websites. They all point to the same thing. So the nine is the peacemaker, the one's the reformer, like my wife, Steve, and Jody, and a lot of people in the helping professions are twos, the helpers. Threes are the achievers, like Laura, and executive directors, and student council presidents, those kind of people. Those are threes. Fours are the individualist. They're the artsy type. Fives are the investigators. They're the bookworm type. Sixes are the loyalist. They're like the face painting team fan, you know? If I go to a Razorback game and I'm wearing all my Razorback gear, that's what a six does. Enthusiast, the seven, that's what I am. We make things a lot of fun, hopefully. Eights are the challenger. They change a lot of things because of their anger. You can't pick your number based on what you like. I was talking to my dad about this, and he was like, now tell me about this. He's 84 and he lives in Searcy, Arkansas, lived there all his life. He was like, tell me about this Enneagram thing. And I told him a little bit. He goes, I'm a nine. I'm a peacemaker. I like that one. I'm like, that's not how this works, Dad. You don't pick your favorite because you like the name of it, right? Peacemaker sounds really good. In a helping profession, this is what we want to be, right? But that may not be what you are. 9types.com says it a little bit different. The one is the reformer. They've got to do everything the right way. Two is the helper. That's the same. I must help others. The motivator is the three. I need to succeed. Four is the romantic. Different little language there. I'm unique. Five is the thinker. They need to understand the world by reading about it. Six is the skeptic. I'm a seven with a six wing. I'm really skeptical of everything, including my skepticism. So that's fun. Sevens are the enthusiast. I want to try new and exciting things all the time. Eights are the leaders. They've got to be strong. And nine is still the peacemaker. They want everybody to get along. Enneagram coach says a little bit different. Let's get through this for the next 5 minutes. And then we'll take a break. And hopefully you all follow me up to Salon 1314 for the second half of this. Enneagram is not a diagnosis. You cannot tell someone what their number is, but you might be able to help them work through it. A good friend of mine is a three at church, and he was all into the Enneagram because his work does the Enneagram training. And he said, you got to read the book, and I was getting into it. And I went back to him and I said, I'm an eight. I've discovered what I am. I'm an eight. And he goes, no, you're not. He goes, I'm not supposed to tell you what your number is, but you're not an eight. Go back to the book. I was like, okay. I kind of felt scolded, right? And I went back, and he was right. I'm a seven. I'm like, oh, I thought it was an 8 because all the numbers are really positive. It took me a little bit to figure out that I'm a 7. This is a process of self-discovery. You will not take a test to know what your number is. In the process of this, you may think initially that you're one type, and then after a couple of weeks or months, discover that you're actually something else. That happens a lot. Don't be ashamed of that. Don't feel bad about that. Your number didn't change. You just discovered what the right number is. Does that make sense? Don't rush to judgment. This is a journey. Don't rush it. The theory says, again, this is not truth. This is just a lens. The theory says people don't change from one basic personality type to another. You always are what you are from birth. We are shaped in our differences by our experience growing up, trauma, stress, family, culture, geography, relationships, places. So we're all have a different flavor. Not every 5 looks like another 5. And that's what I love about the Enneagram, is you just can't pigeonhole people. People are so different, even within their number. What's true are the motivations and the fears. But there can be so many external flavors to each different number. The descriptions are universal and apply equally to males and females, since no type is inherently masculine or feminine. Not everything in your description applies to you all the time, because some days you're having a good day and some days you're having a bad day. And our level of health affects how we operate. Under stress, I look a lot like my wife. I bark. Ones always want to do things the right way. I'm super fun dad, until I'm not. And then I bark. So one day I come home, kids are jumping on the couch. I'm like, that's so fun, because I'm having a good day. If I come home the next day and I'm in a bad mood, get off the couch. I told you 1,000 times that. My kids are going, my dad is crazy. Yesterday it was fine. Today it's not. So when I'm stressed, I look very different than when I'm having a good day. I tend to bark and I want things done the right way, which is not me 90% of the time. But when I get stressed, it really comes out. The Enneagram uses numbers so that it seems more neutral. One number is not better than the other. 9's not better than 1. 5's not better than 4 because they're bigger. They're all neutral. Because a lot of times the world uses negative labels. And you know, the people you work with attach to these labels, like bipolar, schizophrenic. They come in and say to me all the time, I'm bipolar. I'm like, maybe, let's slow down. Because they say, you know, yesterday I was happy and today I'm sad. I'm like, you know, that's more likely being human. We all do that. That doesn't mean, bipolar is very different than this up and down feeling that we all feel a lot. And so they come in with these negative labels that we want to strip away because, you know, my clients have a name. And their name is more important than their label. And if we're going to find labels, let's find better labels. Like the Enneagram, because maybe you're just a 5, maybe you're an 8, maybe you're not what psychiatry says you are. Numerical ranking's not significant. Let's cover this real quick and then we'll take a break. The second paragraph, no type is inherently better or worse than any other. While they all have unique assets and liabilities, some types are often considered more desirable than others in any culture or group. For one reason or another, you may not be happy being a particular type. You may feel that your type is handicapped in some way. As you learn more about all the types, you will see that just as each has unique capacities, each has different limitations. If some types are more esteemed in Western society than others, it's because of those qualities that society rewards, not because of any actual superior value of those types. In our churches of Christ, women tend to misidentify themselves as 2s. Because we taught them they should be helpers, right? And so we have to be careful. The hardest personality to be as a woman is an 8. Because you get called all kinds of pejorative names for being a challenger and being a leader. And you know what guys get called? Awesome, right? He's a leader. He's out front. We got to follow him. And a woman does it, and we go, whoa, hang on. Let's calm down a little bit, lady. And so the hardest type to be in our society right now as a woman is an 8, because it's not rewarded. Guys get rewarded. And so there's a lot of little things like that, that other cultures do it differently. My wife is Asian. Her parents immigrated from Korea. It's very much a collectivist society. So the individualist, the artist, would not be rewarded in that culture. A 6, rewarded, because you've got to fit in and do the right thing. You don't break out and do your own thing if you grow up in a very Asian culture. That makes sense. So we have to be careful about the numbers when you're discovering what yours is, because it might be affected, shaped in a negative way by the group you're in. So just be careful. We have a good friend at church that always thought she was a 2 because that's what she thought she wanted to be or should be, and then discovered much later, I'm a 9. But she said, it's Marion Earnhardt, she said, I thought I was a 2 because I thought that's what I was supposed to be, and she wasn't. So just be careful with that. It helps us let go of our limiting mechanisms, helps us observe our behavior. You can either be an actor on the stage, or you can pull back and observe yourself being an actor on the stage. And we'd much rather have you here. Instead of just being in the play, doing what you do, pull back and observe yourself. I'll close with this, and then we'll transition, give you a break, and we'll move upstairs. What the Enneagram helps me do is kind of like what happened with my golf game a few years ago. Is anybody in here a golfer? 1 or 2. Nobody has time in the helping industry to go play golf. I play golf like 4 or 5 times a year. I love it, though. And I almost quit a few years ago because every shot I was hitting was going about 10 feet off the ground, and it would take a right turn. Not a slice. I would take a slice. I mean, we're talking about a right turn that could kill somebody. I was about to play with my brother-in-law, and I said, I'm going to hurt somebody. I'm not playing today. He goes, just go talk to the golf pro. He belongs to some swanky club in Chicago that I don't belong in, but I get to play there because of him. And he said, just go talk to the golf pro and get some help. And I said, no, what's that guy going to tell me about my swing? Here I am, a therapist, rejecting outside help. I know it's ironic. He's like, just do it, man. I said, okay. So I went down. The guy said, what's happening? I said, look, here's the ball. Here's my club. I'm hitting the ball off the toe, and I just can't seem to figure it out. That's what I thought. And so to solve my own problem, I was trying to scoot up. And he goes, well, take a swing. Let me see what you're doing. And I took a swing. And he goes, no, you're hitting the ball off the shaft. I went, that's cute. No, I'm not. I'm hitting the ball off the toe. He goes, no, you put some tape on it. And then I saw it. It illuminated my brain. I was hitting the ball here. Does anybody understand that? And then, so my attempted solution to the problem was to scoot up. I was making my own problem so much worse. He said, frankly, I don't know how you're hitting the ball at all. He said, so line up, take your regular swing, but I want you to swing in the inside and don't hit the ball. I thought, that's easy. I can not hit a ball. I was hitting it perfect. Perfect. And my brain went, well, look at that. That's what the Enneagram does. What we think is the attempted solution may be the worst thing to do. The Enneagram illuminates an area of our life that we can improve so that we can be more effective. What I thought was the problem was not the problem. And it took an outside source to go, you're doing this. So when I play golf, every once in a while I hit that shot. And I go, I know what that is. That's me hitting it off the shaft. And I correct it, and I don't hit that shot. So every once in a while now, I do my thing. But just not near as often. Does that make sense? That's what the Enneagram does for us. So we're going to take a break so that we can dive into the different types and get pretty specific in the second hour.